PlayStation.
Some more Sony fuck-ups.
Yeah, so we've done our due diligence here on really basically running down the Sony PlayStation portal. They're basically mobile portable device that really isn't portable. So we did our due diligence on running that down the road, and you sent me a message earlier today and was like, what in the all holy hell is this?
Yeah, so we did determine that it is nice that you will actually have a full 1 terabyte drive internally on the Slims. So that's cool. You have the ability to add a disk drive if you'd like. So that's cool. However, the optical drives, according to multiple sources across the internet, could become unusable in the future once the online services used to register the drive will no longer be available in the event of a console reset. So basically, what this means is every time you install a drive or every time you reset your system, so if you have some kind of corrupted data and you need to do a fresh, you know, like basically a factory reset on your system, the console has to reach out to an online, like basically a verification, and it has to re-register your drive. And so without that, it will not read a disk off of your optical drive.
And it's just, I don't know. You sent that to me and it's just insane. I have a question though, because you said anytime, obviously it's factory reset or you install a drive. Does that even mean like whenever you just pop on like an external like USB, like, because the one, you know, you had like how I have my PS5 set up is I have, you know, the little 2 terabyte, you know, stick I slapped in there, the M2. And then I have, I'm not sure how big it is, but it's a little portable. It might be a terabyte or two. I forget what it is, but I slapped it on there for the PS4 games. Right. So I know you can run the external drives. Does it even count for something like that? Because then it's not really installing anything, but...
So, as far as I can tell, it's only the main system internal.
Okay, so if I'm slapping an M2 in there, it's going to...
Right. That should be fine, as far as I can tell. Now, I don't know, in these hands-on, they haven't mentioned the M2. They haven't mentioned external drives and such. But the main, you know, the main system storage...
Or
if you have to reset like the OS, like if you have some kind of issue
with
the OS,
so,
you have to reset.
So basically if the main system crashes, that's when you're kind of at this. Okay. I'm still kind of miffed about the whole thing, but I was when he read that to me, I was like, oh crap. Does that mean anytime you like would do add storage, or if that becomes messed up, you have to replace it, or just the external itself? It's like you're adding something to it. It's like, God, do I have to re-register it then too?
Well, think about it this way. And here's where, you know, it comes down to a preservation issue, because obviously, you know, say 15 years from now, more than likely, those systems are going to be offline. You know, if you're still playing a PlayStation 5 in the year 2035 and your optical drive craps the bed, and then you manage to find an optical drive replacement for it and pop it in there, if they don't do some kind of patch by then, you're not going to be able to play optical discs.
Right.
Now, if you think back, there's been times where they've kind of, before a system's ecosystem shuts down, so like with the Wii U, with the Xbox 360, when their shops close, you can download stuff, and then they do, before it actually kills it, they kind of do like a final patch that knocks some of those restrictions out, so you don't have to do the online check and stuff like that. So unless they enact something of that nature, maybe that's the answer. Maybe down the line, once it's no longer their main system and they're bringing everything offline for it and they're doing end of life stuff, they'll throw that in there that, okay, it no longer needs a check, or there's like some kind of spoof check or something like that where, you know, but as of right now, everything's got to be checked. And I'm assuming, and I could be wrong, I'm assuming this is to keep it so that you have to use Sony's proprietary drives, and that other companies, if they want to make them, can't come out and undercut them on price and say, oh yeah, here's one for $15.
Right, right. You know? Yeah, and I think that's the part that was just weird to me. It's like, you know, yeah, granted, you know, we've talked about this, you know, many, many times here, but, you know, you buy a game and you're ultimately on the hook for, you know, so many, you know, megs, gigs, whatever worth of an update. So what's on the disc is essentially useless at that point. You're just needing the disc to load the game. And that's your ultimate problem with this, is that you could still technically have a game where you've, you know, done all the updates. It's, you've been at it for 10 years, but you still need the disc to launch it, because that's just how it is. That's how it's been for whatever. And, well, yeah, your obstacle goes. And with exactly what you just said, it's like, well, there you go. You just wasted a decade playing that game because you're never playing it again.
Yeah.
Good luck. Go get your hands on trying to something else. Or, yeah, you're right. Unless they patch it out or whatever. It's just, I don't know. It's weird.
And I mean, if we look at stuff, if we want to go down this rabbit hole, we can look at some things and see where Sony has done stuff that's been extremely consumer unfriendly and extremely consumer friendly. Whereas Xbox, you have to buy a proprietary, you know, solid state drive from Seagate, or I forget who the other company is, you know, and it costs hundreds of dollars for $220 at launch for the 1 terabyte solid state memory card that would plug into the back of the Xbox Series X and Xbox Series S. Whereas you could, if you had a PS5, you just throw any M2 drive in there that meets the specs, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that was extremely consumer friendly. And that was awesome. And I've really enjoyed that. That was one of the reasons why I was like, oh man, PlayStation's doing it kind of right this time. And obviously they kept that into the next next iteration, the PS5 Slim. But then they take a step back with the drive issue. And so it's kind of like, you know what, man, either go all in or don't even bother.
Right. Because, I mean, and here's the other thing, too. If it always has to reach out to some service, the service is not 24/7. You know, Sony's had notorious problems with it over the years, and not just them. Other services have, too. And it's like, okay, so I really want to play this game. Well, sorry, service is down for 12 hours. We can't register your optical, which is the most insane thing ever to even consider. I don't know. It's goofy, man. It's like you said, it's going backwards with it. I don't know. It was kind of cool to hear that's like, oh yeah, they're releasing a external optical, and they have one that's got an optical in it, and they're gonna do this, and sounds cool, and then this, you know, right, where the current model doesn't have that.
Right. and that was the thing too, is my whole thing was, okay, no, so this is good. This is more consumers' right to fix, because if you have the only difference between the digital model and the one with an optical drive at this point is that you have to pay an extra $100, I think, to get the drive and the extra piece for the cover to convert it from the all digital to the optical version. So, but in my mind, okay, cool, you just made a consumer friendly decision to say, all right, my drive crapped out, I'm just going to go snag one and pop it in, and I don't have to worry. Like, if the system's out of warranty, you know, obviously if it's in warranty, you send it back to Sony and they fix it for free. But if for whatever reason your optical drive breaks, okay, cool, I can go grab one off the shelf, pop it in, close it up, good to go. Just kind of like they did with their what's the new DualSense Edge or whatever their pro controller is.
Oh yeah, yeah, where it's modular.
Yeah, you know, obviously that's a little bit. I mean, the price point on that is high.
Yeah.
But for the ability to swap out the sticks if they go bad and buy the module, pop new sticks in, and you know, that's pretty consumer friendly from my standpoint.
Yeah, no, it really is. Now, granted, yeah, you're into it for a couple hundred bucks already, but the fact that you can do that, and I think they do release things like that almost have to be consumer friendly, because people brutalize controllers, especially hardcore gamers that they spend hours and hours and hours a day doing, because either that's what they're making money off of, or that's what they enjoy doing, or whatever the case may be. So that kind of makes sense. Like, they, at some point you have to give back to the community on that one, because it's like, eventually they're going to stop shelling out XYZ dollars and they're going to go to your competitor,
right,
or, you know, whatever that is. So, yeah, no, it's wild. I don't get it. Like, much like I didn't get the whole Portal thing. It's very weird. I just don't understand it. You know, there, maybe someone can enlighten us on that one, but the fact that you have to reach out to a service to re-register it off of certain issues that are going to happen. Let's not pretend that these things just, oh yeah, that'll never happen.
Right.
Or that service is always going to be there. That's not the case. We can run up a lot of examples right now of video games themselves that were solely based around an online world, and guess what? Servers shut down, game's gone.
Exactly.
So,
So now, in along with this, with Sony's misstep here. Oh, by the way, portals have found their way out into the world. Reports that I'm hearing are that it feels really good to play on.
Mm-hmm.
Still not convincing me to buy one for more than like $75, but
yeah,
supposedly feels pretty good. One more thing on the controllers before we move on to this thing I'm going to send you in the chat here that we can discuss is with the controllers. From what I've been hearing, the DualShock has been not to the level that Joy-Cons have had them, obviously, but they've been suffering from a lot of drift this generation.
Really?
You think gaming companies just bite the bullet and go fully Hall Effect thumbsticks?
You know, I don't know. Do they? I guess it depends on how... Gosh, I'd imagine, like, how much money are they making, you know, off of these things? Yeah, you know, you can keep it the same way. I would think you'd have to drop your controller cost at some point. We were walking through Sam's Club earlier, and I think they had the current PS5 controllers, not the nice Edge ones, but they were like on $50, and it's like, okay, that's more reasonable than, you know, 70 or 80 or whatever, you know. And I think that's your problem, is that like those things are so expensive that, yeah, they should go to Hall Effect all the way.
Yeah.
It's going to be a matter of controlling the price point on that. I think that's how they're going to end up monitoring that. The other issue being is they tend to shove so much tech in those controllers that it does become a cost issue.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's something else to consider. It's like, you know, if we're going to keep up in the tech, it's going to up the cost, and we're going to have to eventually do something about these thumbsticks, because people aren't going to pay $100 a controller.
Right.
You know?
I mean, if you think about it too, like with the Joy-Cons, as much as we bitch about them, one of the Joy-Cons has a fucking infrared camera in it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's not like you're not getting your bang for your buck as far as the tech that's included in them. The motors in them for the haptic feedback are such that they can actually, now granted not like super detailed, but they can make noises. They can play jingles.
Yeah.
I mean, these things are not just a hollow piece of plastic with a couple buttons on.
No, yeah, and if anyone had a chance to play with like some of the Labo stuff, build the little cardboard things, pop one of those Joy-Cons in there, the one with the camera on it. The cool thing is you could control it with the Switch itself, and you could see the picture on that Switch screen of what you saw that camera looking at. It wasn't very good,
right?
But you could still see it, and it was like, wow, this is awesome. Like I'm controlling my controller with my system.
Right.
It was like, you know, that's another conversation for another day, but very interesting stuff that they were attempting to do, you know, and really have. And I don't know that a lot of people realize that. It's like, oh yeah, it's just a little black area on the Joy-Con. No, that's a camera.
that's definitely a camera, bud. All right, so I'm gonna send you something now that I saw. Thought it was kind of interesting and scary at the same time. So Microsoft signed a deal with InWorld. And what they are is they're an artificial intelligence company. And what they do, what they did is sign up to give developers an AI powered design co-pilot. So say you're trying to work on a game, the next Starfield, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're having trouble coming up with a character design. Throw a couple prompts in this this AI co-pilot, and it generates the design of the character for you. Say you're having trouble writing some lines for some NPCs. Throw a description of the situation in, and it writes the script. And what they're talking about too with this, and this is the one part where I get, where I say, okay, that's kind of cool, is integrating AI into NPCs so they can actually make live commentary on the situation in the game of what's going on. So say for like Elder Scrolls, for instance, a dragon just attacked the city. You go up to one, wow, that shit was crazy. There was a dragon that just attacked the city. And they would comment on it. And like, come up with their own stuff. Oh, well, not with their own. So the AI would generate the response based on different variables that are going on in the game at that time. And that part is kind of cool. What I don't like is the eventual, you know, you think about this. This leads to the eventual phasing out of that human element of the game design, the art of the game.
Yep.
Whether people want to admit it or not, video games have a place. There is an argument to be made that they're an art form. They're a form of expression, much like movies, much like comics, much like TV, or any other work of fiction. They are an art form. And when you start introducing AI into it, especially from a level as high as Microsoft, that's worrying to me.
What do you
think about this?
No, and there's a good comment on this article you sent me. And just for reference, it's a Polygon article, and it's Microsoft's InWorld AI announcement. But there's a comment that is tabbed on the side, and it says, you're going to have a small pool of information to draw creativity from, and it's going to start feeling the same. And I certainly think that is a 100% accurate statement, because that's correct. You know, you're going to be getting very similar things, but you know, it'll be cost effective. These companies are going to want to get rid of developers. They're going to want to get rid of the creators, because they see that this tool on the side is, it's creating, it's doing, and it might be great for a couple of years, you know, and profit margins are going to explode, and they're just going to see all this stuff because they're not having to pay human beings to do it. At the end of the day, it's, you know, it's going to run its course, and a lot of stuff's going to start looking very similar. You know, it's just the way it is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I see its power in small doses, you know, especially for, things like you just said, in a game like, you know, an Elder Scrolls type game where you're having to possibly add things to an NPC, particularly one that doesn't do a whole lot. They're just a villager that walks around, or a town citizen that might have one line, or they're just, you know, whatever, you know, adding to things like that. But as far as, you know, where does this go with your voice acting, your whatever, and this article that you sent mentioned that, particularly something else that kind of struck my interest here had to do with the talking about, though it wasn't necessarily this, but Project Red using AI to recreate a voice actor's voice after death.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about that before. It's, I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah.
Really weird.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. And a couple things that popped up in here. So they talk about how eventually you're going to, you know, because it's an AI and it learns from whatever it can from the internet or whatever its input is, there's going to be things that it learns that aren't Creative Commons that it's learned from. The stuff that's intellectual property, stuff that has copyrights on it, stuff that's trademarked. And so you're going to have to sift through that. But how do you determine at what point is too much, you know, like at what point does it stop becoming just AI generated content and become copyright infringement?
Right. And here's the other thing too. Yeah, no, go ahead.
At what point does, well, that they, we want it to sound like a Robert De Niro type character. At what point does it just sound so much like Robert De Niro that it's indistinguishable?
Right. Right. But you made a great point though about copyright. Anyone that's done any kind of Google searching over the years, particularly for images, if you dive down, you can look at ones that are Creative Commons and they're free usage for anything, you know. And of course, there's different levels of that too. You can non-commercial purposes, whatever. They're only marked that way because somebody said that they were. AI is only going to understand what it sees. Things are incorrectly tagged all the time. And I'm just talking about something simple, looking at images. I don't even want to understand. I have no clue. I'm scratching the surface of Creative Commons on anything else. So AI is only going to see what it sees as that. And that may not be correct. So like you said, you're going to find stuff that's basically stolen, you know, and it's going to lead into exactly what you just said with the Nero example. You know, it's not good. Not good. To kind of wrap up our video game conversation real quick. I do want to talk on Mario Kart real quick. Got to download Wave 6. And it added new characters. And I would be remiss if I said I've played a couple hours of it now, and I've only been Diddy Kong because of it's really, really like, oh, this is awesome because I have Diddy Kong Racing back, kind of.
But dude, I get that.
But it's just Diddy Kong. But they, you know, they did add Funky Kong and Pauline from Odyssey, and
Pauline from Donkey Kong, you mean?
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. You're right. Who else? Baby Peachette? Peachette. No. Peachette. That's who they are.
Oh, Peachette. Okay.
Peachette. I'm sorry. Yeah, Pauline, you're right.
Junior back in there? Because that would be...
No. No, those are the four. But the cool thing I did like about Wave 6, which I thought was really interesting. So, they added tracks from other games before. They actually added a brand new track that's never been in any Mario Kart before, which is really cool. It's I think it's Piranha Plant Slide or something like that. But it's really neat because you add all these characters into a game from their universe that you know, obviously, whatever, it is what it is. They just add whoever. But they actually put a new track in a game that's like damn near 10 years old. Like, whereas all the other tracks that they've been putting in have just been from other games. Like, they really haven't added anything new. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Hmm.
You know, it's just it's just like a brand new track. So it was kind of cool. Yeah, yeah. And the one thing, though, I do want to talk about, though, that was really interesting to me, I came across on a feed, is that they actually, with this version 3.0.0, took out the ability to sandbag.
I saw that.
Yeah, and I don't know. Do you do that at all? Have you done that?
No, man. Look, if people do that, cool. You know, whatever your strategy is, I prefer to never put it in question.
Right.
I lower rates, and if I go wire to wire in first place, cool. If I go, you know, however it turns out, as long as I'm in first place at the end, but I want to be competitive throughout, you know?
Yeah. So I don't really do it either. The only times I would do it is when I was messing around to see what kind of power-ups, that I would get. And I think the new track by Piranha Plant Pipeline Cove. I was trying to find the name. Piranha Plant. No. What's it called? I don't know. I assumed it was a brand new track because it wasn't linked to anything. Although this actually says it's from Mario Kart Tour.
Oh.
But it doesn't. But here, you know what the weird thing is? Hmm. On the game itself, it doesn't come up that it's from Tour like all the other Tour tracks do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, maybe it was just maybe they'll fix that in a patch. Anyhow. In my little playing around with it, though, with the whole sandbagging thing, I was playing with the kids on 200cc. We're just messing around. And because I wanted to see like what would happen if you got like, you know, back far enough, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th place, typically you would get the slide. You'd get all the, you know, all the power ups at once, or you get a lot of bullet bills, or there's a lot of golden mushrooms, a lot of stuff to try to catch you up, you know, pretty quickly. The only thing I noticed that was happening more than anything else was the bullet bill. That was it.
Hmm.
So, like, I think their fix worked because you really can't do it anymore. A lot of stuff can happen, you know, still, like in the middling spots. And it's like, okay, I still might have the ability to win, but I don't know that you have the ability to win, like, if you're that far back on a third lap,
right,
anymore, because you're not going to be getting all those in a row. Like, it's going to be segmented. It's going to be, you know, I mean, you're not getting like just banana peels, but
right,
it's not. Yeah, they fixed it that way. I noticed that not a single one of us was getting the slide where you'd get all the power ups at once. You're either getting a bullet bill or you're getting like maybe three mushrooms, or, you know, something that was getting you ahead of other racers, but you weren't getting immediately catapulted to the front. So I think they fixed it.
Nice.
To a point. I could be wrong.
Well, I did see that too, that they had said that they were taking that out, and people have been, you know, people are either for it or against it. And it seems like if there's no real in between. I personally am for removing it, just because I'm, you know, I hate like exploits and stuff like that in competitive type games. If it's a game where I'm playing single player and I'm just playing against a computer, cool, exploit all day, let's go. But
yeah,
if it's a, you know, competitive with other people, that's just fucking cheesy, man.
Yeah,
speaking of Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, did you see that in Asian markets and Europe, they have released the physical card with the DLC on it and a bunch of extras?
What were the extras? I wasn't sure about that.
Like pins and stickers and stuff.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. So no word on a release in America yet, or in North America, but I would be for that.
Yeah, no, that'd be cool. They I'll be honest. I'm really impressed with the fact that they've added on to that game the way they have, because it's a super fun game. And it's just, you know, they finally, to me, perfected, you know, that universe. I'm not saying it's the best iteration of the series.
Right.
But with the amount of tracks, the amount of characters, just the different things you can do, customizations, different ways you can play, you know, it, and then scanning amiibos in for unlocking costumes. And there's just so many different things for different people in that game. To me, it's just the penultimate version of the game. Now, look, I will go back and play Super Mario Kart or 64 all day long. I will, because that's just how I grew up. But I just love this iteration of it. It's absolutely perfect. So I'm so glad that they added all this stuff to it. So it would be cool to see that released. I'd love to see these extras. Give me more. So, all right, that's going to wrap us up on this one. You got any closing thoughts on Sony or Mario Kart or video games?
Look, honestly, what it boils down to is, Sony, get your shit together.